group to do the roll call. Mrs. Hemmings?
Good morning, sir. Present.
Thank you very much. Morning.
Mr. Mumbuyani?
Honorable Mumbuyani.
Chairperson, good morning. Good morning to the colleagues. I'm available. Thank you.
Good morning. Honorable Yako.
Morning, everyone. I'm available. Thank you.
Good morning.
Mr. Burns Namashe.
Honorable Burns Namashe.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm present. I like to use that one, like Ms. Yago, as if I'm in a classroom.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable Namashe. Good morning.
Thank you.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honorable Mulder.
Good morning, Chair. Everyone, I'm present. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Ms. Muapse, Chair.
Honorable Muapse.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
Mr. Thring, Chair.
Honorable Thring.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. Great to be back in the
Good morning. We missed you yesterday. Welcome. We got your apology. Thank you very much.
Chair, then that's all members we have on the platform, Chair. We have an apology from Mr. McPherson, who will be joining us late, Chair. Oh, Mr. Cuthbert. My apologies.
Honorable Cuthbert.
Present.
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Cuthbert. Thank you very much.
Chair, we have an apology from Mr. McPherson, who will be joining us a little bit late, Chair, and also from Ms. Mutahung, who is currently having MTN connectivity problems in her area, Chair, so she's trying to join us as she can, Chair. So and then we have full members on the platform, Chair.
It does actually constitute the committee to be representative to be able to do its business.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we can be able to proceed having greeted the members. I can see that there are officials who are connected as well. And can we actually welcome the staff and the secretariat? Good morning to everybody. Secretariat, we can flight the agenda for today's meeting. We do actually have the agenda before us. You did actually speak to apologies. Let's actually look at the adoption of the agenda. The item is briefing and deliberations in terms of the remitted bills. So can I just maybe check with members if ever they're comfortable that we should be able to proceed with the agenda before us as proposed? Honorable member.
Honorable Mbuyani, to propose that we adopt that.
Thank you. Honorable Mbuyani is proposing that we actually accept the agenda. There was ECHO technical team. If you can just watch that. Can I actually ask the contact? There's an echo. Okay, Secretariat, can we actually get the seconder, honorable members? Honorable Mbuyane moved. Can I get a seconder?
Yes, sir. I was raising my hand.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I second the move.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Secretariat, can you actually help us? I think there's a bit of an echo on the sound side. If you can just help us sort that out, that will be actually quite helpful. Let me just say before we actually proceed, is there any objection on the adoption of the agenda? If none, can I ask that we actually then proceed? Secretariat, I'm sure you actually, in terms of the program, have the team that will actually take us through. Yes. So
Chair?
Let's actually just... Yes, Secretariat?
Chair, we have Advocate Tondemarwe who worked with us on the bill in the previous parliament, who will take the committee through the, a high level presentation, because we the committee has previously discussed the matter, and so she will just do a high level presentation just to bring the committee up to date on the issues again, so the committee can then inform the deliberations.
It will be a reminder, because we did receive a presentation. We went away as parties to actually consult and make sure that at least when we come and discuss, at least we are able to speak to the same issues. So I think it is completely in order. Let me actually welcome Advocate Pater Merve to be able to actually, it's just a reminder of what we received as a presentation. It's what we took away with us to actually have consultation. And I think at this stage, we are able to actually get our discussion going. Can I invite Honorable Advocate van der Merwe to speak to us?
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. Good morning. Good morning, members. Yes, if I can, Chair, can I just, I can proceed with my with the presentation just to refresh everyone's memory. Thank you. I've asked the committee support staff if they can just help me to flight the presentation. If you see my face looking the other way, I'm not having a party by myself. I'm just using two screens, and I'm using more than one document for my notes. Thank you, Chair. So if we go on to slide two, just to remind members of what we are dealing with here, this is a legislative process, but it is not what we used to. There are certain limitations. In other words, we can only, the President can only refer concerns of constitutionality. So the whole bill is not open. We need to restrict ourselves to the reservations of the President. And that is also contained in our joint rules, that the committee must consider and confine itself to the President's reservations. If we go to slide three, these are the six reservations that the President raised. Now, you can see that they're very high level, very short. We unpacked them. They are quite complex, or some of them are quite complex. The first one is, of course, classification and whether these bills do not fall in the Schedule 4 matters of trade and cultural matters, in which event, if they do, they should have been classified as Section 76 bills. Then certain clauses, 5, 7, and 9, whether these, they are retrospective, there's no doubt about that, but whether in being retrospective, they do not constitute perhaps arbitrary deprivations of property, which would make them in contravention of Section 25 of the Constitution. Then there was a concern about public participation and whether there was sufficient public participation on the matter of fair use specifically. Impermissible delegations of legislative power to the minister. Now, these refer to the same clauses that deal with retrospectivity. So as a compromise, what the committee in the Fifth Parliament did there was to delegate certain functions to the minister, things that had to still be done in respect of the process that had to be followed on that retrospectivity. I'll get to that a little bit in more detail in a little bit. Whether the copyright exceptions, whether all of them would be in compliance with Section 25, in other words, would some of them perhaps constitute arbitrary deprivation of property, which would make them unconstitutional, or unreasonably affect the right to freedom of trade, occupation, and profession to such an extent that they do not comply with Section 36 of the Constitution, which of course allows limitation of rights. And then lastly, international treaty implications and whether the bills do comply with those. So on slide four, if I can start with the reservation on tagging. So if you can go to the next slide there. So both of these bills deal with intellectual property. Now, intellectual property in itself is a national competency. The bills regulate copyright. They regulate performers' rights. These rights result from the expression of culture and from products that are used in trade. But the bills themselves, the content of the bills themselves, in our view, do not fall in trade or cultural matters. If we look at cultural matters, the bills do not restrict or allow or prescribe anything in respect of expression of a culture. Trade, it does not include trade itself. Even if you take into account that trade...
Can you move the slide?
Thank you. So trade in itself is not a term that we can apply and say, textbook definition, it is X, this is what it means. We need to look at the context and whether there is something that has to do with trade involved. But even if you take this concept very wide, very broad, it cannot include the administration and protection of intellectual property, copyright protection, or even transactions in respect of such intellectual property. Yes, the fact that you have to register your performance protection right, the fact that there is a protection of your copyright in your work has a knock-on effect on trade, because your trade relationship is affected by those rights that the law gives. But we do not classify bills for the knock-on effect. We classify for the content of the bill and what the bill itself regulates. The fact that the bills were referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders is not something that we use as a test for classification of legislation. And that is because Section 18 of the relevant act is very broad. It talks about pertains to. Now, anything pertains to almost. It's a much, much broader concept, and therefore it cannot be used as a test by itself of classification. It is our recommendation in respect of tagging that both bills were correctly classified as the Section 75. However, we need to point out that should the committee feel uncomfortable with this advice, the committee may decide to err on the side of caution and recommend a reclassification of these bills to be Section 76. If we can go to the next slide, I'm going to take reservations 2 and 4 together because they deal with the same clauses in the bill. So on slide five now, thank you very much. So what we deal with here is these specific clauses dealt with the rights of authors, and there was a concern that some authors were unfairly exploited in the past, and that there is a need for authors to be more fairly treated. And because of that, these clauses were given a retrospective application, because the committee in the Fifth Parliament felt it doesn't help that you only protect going forward. You need to address concerns that happened in the past as well. So when we look at deprivation of property, there is a substantive reason. There's a clear rationale. We will pass that hurdle. It is the law of general application. We will pass that hurdle. However, when it comes to process, when it comes to certainty in law, there is a concern. We did raise that concern with the committee in the Fifth Parliament as well, but the view at that point in time was that we cannot wait for this uncertainty to first be finalized, and that is in where the delegation to the minister came in. For the minister to go and do certain impact assessments, et cetera, and then come back with a proposal of how the process would work. So, yes, we are uncomfortable with these clauses, the specific clauses that make these sections 6A, 6A, 7A, and 8A retrospective, and it would be our recommendation to delete these clauses so that new sections that are inserted into the Act are actually only prospective. And then this committee can address the injustices of the past by way of oversight and asking the department to come up with a solution that can work. So on the same aspect, if the committee is of the view that we must delete the subsection 7 in each of these clauses, then the delegation's concern also falls away because it's contained in the same clause and it is only necessary because of the retrospective application. If the committee, however, feels that they want to retain these sections and keep these clauses retrospective, then it is our view that the delegations to the minister is not delegating plenary power. It is simply part of the oversight function of the National Assembly. An assembly can say, we delegate to the executive to do X, Y, and Z, and come back to us and report, and we will approve that. And it's quite likely that these delegations would pass constitutional muster, and therefore no amendment would be necessary to the delegations. On the next slide, speaking to public participation reservation, so the concern here was that the Copyright Act uses fair dealing. The bill itself introduced the concept of fair use. This was extensively consulted on. And from the comments, there were three possible systems proposed. Some members of the public were in favor of fair use as introduced by the bill. Other members of the public were in favor of retaining fair dealing as in the Act. And some proposed a hybrid system, and the committee in the end agreed on a hybrid system. So this was the one aspect of the public participation that was considered. Then there was also a lot of criticism about the bill's drafting and how the bill was drafted and certain terminology that was used seemingly incorrected and caused some interpretation challenges. And the committee agreed that the bill must be redrafted. So when we redrafted the bill, we changed where the amendments were fitted into the Act. So we created a new section 12A. However, the content of 12A was already in the bill as introduced and was already consulted on. So it wasn't something that was new. The amendments that were made, mostly the most important one was, in order to make it a hybrid system, the word such as was included. And this comes from the public. It is not necessary for a committee to keep going back to the public simply because the committee has done what the public suggested it must do. If there's something new, if it's substantive, and the public has not been consulted on it, then we must go back. So our recommendation is that there was sufficient public involvement on fair use. However, Parliament has significant discretion, and if this committee feels uncomfortable at all, it will be within the power of this committee to recommend further public involvement on this specific issue. Then if we go on to the next slide, slide 7, this deals with the copyright exception. So the one concern was that it is arbitrary deprivation. Now first off, intellectual property must have exceptions because intellectual property in itself is actually a limitation of other rights. It limits the rights to education, to dignity, to equality, to trade, to freedom of expression. So there is a balance already when you talk about intellectual property. The exception in this bill is actually just aligning copyright and performance protection rights with the digital era. It is promoting multilateral development. And this, in fact, is advancing constitutional values and human rights. So there is a continuation of this balance between the rights of copyright holders, performance protection right holders, but also advancing other constitutional values and human rights. Furthermore, the exceptions are not open-ended. Firstly, there is a general four-factor test in Clause 12A, Paragraph B, and some of these exceptions in themselves have additional limits. The second concern was that it is limiting Section 22 rights, which is your right to choose a trade, occupation, and profession. Now, the Constitutional Court indicated that legislation will limit your choice of trade, occupation, and profession if the effect of that legislation makes it actually undesirable, difficult, unprofitable to actually enter into that trade, occupation, or profession. So the test is whether there is a legal barrier to entry, which in this case is not the case, or if there is a bar that will deter people from entering into that trade, occupation, and profession. And I think that is what the concern is here. Is the bar set so high that people will no longer want to trade in copyright in performance protection rights and so on, or trade in the products that, that are affected by those. In other words, would it be worth my while to still be a publisher of books? Would it be worth my while to still assist artists in making recordings and transmitting those records? So that's the question that we have to ask. But if we look at the bills, both of them aim to achieve a shift in the profits towards authors. Now, authors are also in this profession, in this trade, in this occupation. It is not as if it is only the publisher or only the record company. There are also authors involved. And with authors, of course, I mean the definition as is given in the Copyright Act, which includes anyone who created a work. So it includes your singer, it includes your songwriter, it includes your novelist. They are also in this profession, and what the bills aim to do is to shift the balance, because currently the balance is such that there are actually people who have who find entry into these professions very limiting, because there isn't sufficient money for them to be made. And specifically, of course, I'm talking about the authors here. They are the ones limited at the moment. So the bills actually is just shifting this balance so that there is more entry into this area for everyone. And that is what I'm saying in the next bullet. There will be new trade, new occupational and professional opportunities. So the other concern about Section 22 is whether you are regulating these trades, occupations and professions in a reasonable way. And the test is simply whether there's a rational basis for it. The question is not if another measure may be more effective or less disruptive. So the question is simply, is there a rational basis? And I think if we look at the purpose and objective of both these bills, that is clear. It is clear that there is a rational basis for what is proposed in these two bills. If we can then go on to slide 8, this is the last aspect of the copyright exceptions. There was also a concern that the copyright exceptions would not comply with the 3 steps. Now, firstly, the president may only refer matters that are of constitutional concern. International treaties are in themselves not constitutional concerns. And I'll speak more to this on the next slide. But I just want to mention that here, because the 3-6 test is also about international treaties. So the Australian Law Reform Commission actually considered this aspect of the exceptions in respect of fair use and whether they comply with the international treaty, and specifically the 3-step test. And what they found is that if they look at the history of the test, the interpretation of the test, members' practices, then they were of the view that in fact fair use does comply with the 3-step test. Not just relying on Australian law, because we're South Africa. If we look at the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, where we can see how treaties should be interpreted, it is clear that the practices of other signatories are very important when you interpret a treaty. Now, what we have here is that the United States of America already applies fair use when it joined the relevant treaties, and they were not required to change that regime of fair use, which gives us an indication then that fair use does comply. Because you can't sign and not be compliant and still be accepted. So if you have fair use and you've signed and you're accepted, it must mean that the 3-step test is not a hindrance to fair use. Also, a number of other signatories have since changed to the fair use regime, and none of these have been challenged, which indicates that there is a general acceptance among members that fair use does comply with the 3-step test. Furthermore, fair use will bring economic and social benefits. As I've indicated before, these bills are trying to balance rights and to give more of protection to giving effect to certain constitutional rights, like the right to education, right of freedom of expression, and so on. So our courts will really require strong and persuasive arguments that fair use does not comply with the 3-step test. Now, the reason I'm bringing our courts in here, and this I think will take me over onto the next slide as well, so I won't repeat it there. Although treaties are not in themselves constitutional concerns, when we look and when a court interprets the rights in the Constitution, they will have regard to international treaties and how they are, whether they are binding on South Africa or not. So in this respect, on specifically three-step and the exceptions themselves, it is our recommendation that the exceptions are in fact not arbitrary, they do not limit the right in Section 22, and they comply with the three-step test. So if we can go to the last slide with content, it's slide 9, and we look at the international treaty implications. So as I've said, a court will have regard to treaties when a court considers the specific rights. But a court can only have regard to treaties that have in fact been ratified or domesticated by South Africa in terms of our constitution, Section 231. And none of the treaties involved in the referral from the president have so been ratified or domesticated. And the legislature cannot legislate subject to possible law. It is simply a limitation that cannot be placed on the legislature. What would happen is, let's say, these bills are passed, they become law, we then ratify the treaties, and if there is then some disjuncture, your act will have to be amended at that stage. However, first off, these treaties, over and above the fact that they are not yet part of South African law, they're not constitutional concerns. As I've indicated, they do not form constitutional rights and obligations. And so the President should actually not have referred this back to the committee. It is outside the scope of Section 79(1). However, in our view, the committee's response and in its report, the committee could state that these treaties should not have been part of the Section 79 referral. It falls outside of what the Constitution allows. But again, if the committee feels uncomfortable, the committee may decide to reconsider in respect of the remitted bill, looking at the treaty. And I know that the department has already addressed the committee on this. And their view was that the bills do comply with these treaties. And from our side, from legal side, the treaties have been part of the development process of these bills from the start. In fact, these bills give effect to these treaties. They're definitely not speaking against them. If anything, these are the acts that are domesticating these treaties, and they are in compliance. So that is the assurance that we can give this committee. From our side, and I know that it has been given from the department. The department can confirm if they want to, or if they disagree with me, they can say, but I doubt, because that's not how I understood their presentation. I understood that the bills do comply with the treaties from their side and from our side as well, it's both our views. But, of course, as I said before, the committee does have a lot of discretion and can decide that they want to open this matter again. Members, thank you. That is from legal side, just a refresher. I've tried not to say too much, but it is complex issues. I hope that I've refreshed your memory for your deliberations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me just say it will be then important if members have got questions for clarity to the presentation we've just received, because I think the purpose of today's meeting is to get this reminder meeting and be able to actually pick up on issues where we think if there are clarity questions to the legal team, we can actually be able to engage on that and be able to actually discuss if ever there are other areas we need to actually talk to. And then we are going to reconvene, move away, have a look at what we discussed, and then be able to come back and actually take decisions to take the process forward in our next meeting. Can I check if there are any further comments, questions for clarity from honorable members? And then maybe we can actually just check if ever there are any inputs. Because I think we can speak to advocates, panel member, in terms of the issues that were presented and share the presentation as well. Can I open up the floor to honorable members?
Chair, we have Mr. Ben Namashe, Chair.
Honorable Ben Namashe. we can look at other hands as well as Secretariat, but let's take Honorable Advance Namashe.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. Let me appreciate the presentation by Advocate Father Mervin. Chair, I just want to get a sense from Advocate Father Mervin on four areas. The first one is that if we agree that the content of the bill would impinge partly on issues that would include cultural matters, customary law, and indigenous law. Isn't that a matter that would relate to Schedule 4 of the Constitution? And if it relates to Schedule 4 of the Constitution, it would obviously be a concurrent matter. And if it is a concurrent matter, isn't therefore constitutionally correct to tag a legislation that deals with Schedule 4 issues as a Section 76 bill? Linked to that, Chair, as a second matter, there are tests which form part of our case law. For instance, the doctrine of peace and substance, as well as the substantial measure test, which are very critical in making that kind of determination to assist us as the committee as to the validity of the tagging. To what extent, as Advocate Father Mervin made use of those important instruments in giving the committee the advice. Thirdly, we also look into the question of the fair use. I just want to check. I'm not yet arguing. Just want to check whether some of the factors that are critical, for instance, if we look into the purpose, you know, of the use, the nature of the use, the effect of that which will be done probably to the market. You know, those are some of the factors which are key. I wanted to check whether those have been taken into account. So those are the issues, Chair. I thought I should, of course, the last one would be the issue around the international treaty. If South Africa is a signatory of certain treaties, and as she has correctly identified Section 31 of the Constitution, now I'm just not sure about the binding effect. Because if those treaties have been ratified, I mean, have been signed, or South Africa is a signatory to those, and I would check. Yes, I do understand that in terms of those treaties, constitutionally, they must be ratified by Parliament for them to take effect. But the fact that South Africa is a signatory to those treaties, what does it mean? So we need to have clarity, because there may be a constitutional issue in that we might be challenged as to having signed a treaty, and the next thing we then say such a treaty is constitutionally invalid in terms of our South African constitution, you see. And of course the other issue is the referral of bills in terms of Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. I think the House of Traditional Leaders has an obligation, for instance, when a legislation is referred to the House of Traditional Leaders, it has to solicit or converse views from provincial houses of traditional leaders and also local houses of traditional leaders. You know, so in that sense, if it has to go that route of being referred to the House of Traditional Leaders, and obviously if it is a matter that would impinge on cultural, customary law and or indigenous law, in terms of Schedule 4, it's not something that Parliament has an option. It's an obligation. It has to be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders. And if it is, it has to be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders, it can't be considered as a Section 75. So these are some of the contradictions that I'm looking at, which must be clarified. And I think Advocate Bernard Merwe, I would be happy if she can come out helpful in giving clarity to those. Thank you very much, Chair.
Let me take further comments, honourable members. Secretariat, do we have comments?
There's
yes.
No further hands, Chair, at the moment.
Okay. Let's actually go back to
Chair?
The yes.
Anna just raised his hand.
Who is that?
Mr. Mbuyane.
Okay. Honourable Mbuyane, if I can take your hand, your comments, please.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. Chair, I think on the issue of the retrospective. I think somewhere let me first welcome the presentation by Advocate Van der Merwe, and also try to get some clarity on these matters. Like the retrospective one, we have agreed that the retrospective is not feasible and it's not possible if you will count years back. Then if we agree that the retrospective is not feasible, then what can we have as a legislation that will try to protect the previous disadvantage. The ones that are not getting anything, but they are performing. And the one that they are being exploited by the process in terms of the artists and the performers who exploited in the past, and some of them dying, being paupers. So I just wanted to check maybe from the understanding of the advocate to say, yes, we can agree that retrospective is not cannot be part or can be removed on those reservations. Then what is it that we can put there? Because we wanted to have people that were exploited in the past getting at least something in terms as a compensation. Then I wanted just to check that. The other one is the question of treaty. I just wanted to check the treaties in terms of the constitution vis-à-vis the treaty. Which one comes first, the constitution of the land or the agreement or the treaty that has been signed by South Africa outside? I'll pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Secretary, if we can just check if ever there are any further hands, because
Chair,
I think...
No further hands, Chair.
Okay. Let's actually invite the advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson. Sorry. I've raised my hand.
But there was no indication.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I just want to check on the delegation of powers to the minister. The ANC is of the view that delegation of powers to the executive is a norm in our laws. However, this clause on delegation of powers to the executive automatically falls away in the delegation of retrospectivity clause as they are linked. Then we want to get clarity on that.
Thank you, Honourable Mose. Advocate, I'm sure we can actually invite you then to just comment on the issues raised by honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were lots of interesting questions, and I think from the questions you can see just how complex these bills are, and of course the reservations just add to that complexity. If we can look at tagging as such, so when we classify legislation, we look at the case of Tongwane. And Tongwane is the case that changed the test for classification of legislation from certain substance to substantial measure. So what used to happen when we classified legislation is that we would look at the bill as a whole, that we look at the fifth and substance of it. What is the subject matter of this bill? And in this case, of course, it would be intellectual property. Question would be very easy. Is intellectual property national competency? No, it was in Section 75. What Tongwane, the Constitutional Court in the Tongwane matter brought in was that we need to look at the provisions. You can't just say that this deals with intellectual property and therefore it is in Section 75. You need to look at whether there is a provision in the legislation that could fall within Schedule 4, in a Schedule 4 matter in a substantial measure. So when we classify legislation, when legal services advises the joint tagging mechanism, when legal services advises, we look at every single clause of a bill. And we consider whether that clause and its content might fall in a matter in Schedule 4. And in this case, it would be cultural matters and trade. Those would be the biggest things being affected by it. It could even be consumer protection. That is also something that we would look at. I mean, there's a number of Schedule 4 matters that we will consider. We consider all of them, but I think on these bills, those would have been the three big ones that we would have looked at. Then you look at every provision. And once you're done with the bill, and if none of those provisions, in our view, fall in a Schedule 4 matter, Then we recommend to the joint tagging mechanism that the bill be classified as a Section 75. The joint tagging mechanism will then go through the same process. They will consider our advice. If they agree, they will agree to use the classification that we propose. If they disagree, they can ask for further advice from us, from someone else. They might come to a different conclusion. In these instances, these two bills, both legal services and the joint tagging mechanism, were of the view that if you take into account substantial measure tests as set out by the Tongwane matter, you look at each of the provisions of the bill, these bills are Section 75 bills. Now, the question on respect of whether any of the content of the bill could fall into these issues of cultural matters, customary law, indigenous law, that is where it is our view that it does not. But as I've said in my presentation, this committee might say, in fact, the Tongwane matter gives that leeway, the liquorable matter as well, gives that leeway to say that where Parliament wants to err on the side of caution, no court will say that is an unconstitutional step. In other words, tagging something a 76 will not result in unconstitutionality because it should have been a 75. So it is open for this committee to err on the side of caution and say, look, we hear what legal services said, we hear what the joint tagging mechanism found, we feel uncomfortable, we're not 100% sure, we want to err on the side of caution, we will recommend that this be classified as Section 76. That path is open to the committee. But like I've said, taking into account the substantial matter from Guani, the liquor bill cases, we are of the view that these bills deal with the regulation of intellectual property. Each of their clauses deal with the regulation of intellectual property. They do not deal with trade. They do not deal with cultural matters. They do not deal with indigenous law. Yes, their effect will change how we trade, will change what we do in our cultural matters, but we do not classify for knock-on effects. We classify on the exact wording of the bill, what the bill itself regulates, and that, in our view, is the Section 75 matter on both bills. In respect of fair use, this is where, to some extent, on both fair use and the question on international treaties, this is where I need to remind members that it's very difficult because we are so used to when we do legislation, and I mean, I fall into that trap as well, and I have to remind myself, we need to be so cautious. On Section 79, we must restrict ourselves to the reservations of the President. So the President's reservation was that there wasn't sufficient public participation on the issues of fair use. So in other words, what this committee can consider is whether there was sufficient public participation on the matters of fair use. And in our view, there was sufficient participation on the matters of fair use. I don't want to be unfair to this committee because this is not the committee that considers the bill. And I understand that some of the members here were not part of that process and there might be a discomfort with those members. So I also want to assure the members, even though this is not strictly part of the Section 79 process, I want to assure members that when the Committee of the Fifth Parliament considered fair use, fair dealing, a hybrid system, they looked at what the effect would be on the market. And it was specifically because of what the effect on the market would be that they decided on a hybrid system. Because that was the best way they thought a balance could be reached between the rights that are being affected in respect of work, in respect of the intellectual property in that work, in respect of any income that can be derived from that by authors, by your copyright owners, such as your publishers, such as your record houses, and so on. So on fair use, the Parliament definitely looked at the market, but we must just be cautious that we don't consider that as part of the report. This committee can only consider the question of public participation and whether that was sufficient, and as I said, in our view, that was sufficient. In respect of the treaties, and I'm going to just take the two questions together. So the question was about, you know, we're a signatory. Now, if you're a signatory, what that indicates is that the state signs a the treaty, and by signing a treaty, it is saying to other countries, yes, we are in agreement with this kind of approach to the matter. We as a country want to take this further. Then the country has to come back, or the minister or whoever was part of that negotiation process must come back to the country itself, to South Africa, and say, look, there's this treaty. Sounds very good. We've consulted on it. We've negotiated on it. And this is really a policy that we as the executive want to propose going forward. And that is why we signed it. We said that we would like to convince our country to incorporate this, to ratify this, to domesticate it into our law. It is possible that Parliament, when it looks at that treaty, might say, no. This is going to impinge on our sovereignty as a country. We are not going to go there. And then that is the end of it. That treaty is not binding. So Section 231 is how we make treaties binding on South Africa. None of these treaties, by the way, have been made binding like that. They've not been ratified. They've not been included in our domestic laws. Which brings me to the second question. So let's say they have. Okay, they have it, but let's say they have. What would their effect on our law be? Now, this is where the case of Leinster that I referred to in my presentation. Here the court says, and I'm just going to read, it follows that the incorporation, in other words, ratifying, domesticating, remember which these treaties have it, but if they have, the case would be, it creates ordinary domestic statutory obligations. Incorporation does not transform the rights and obligations in it into constitutional rights and obligations. And then, if we look at what comes first, our constitution comes first. So, you cannot have a treaty that overrides the Constitution. You can have a treaty that informs the interpretation of the rights in the Constitution. So when our courts will look at the Bill of Rights and the rights contained in there, for instance, let's say they look at the rights of arrested persons, they will look at the treaties that Parliament, that South Africa has entered into through Section 231, and they will see what has become part of our law, what are the international obligations that South Africa has agreed to, committed to, ratified, and then they will use that in their interpretation. But that in itself, it does, the treaties do not become constitutional obligations, and our constitution is still the supreme law in our country. Then the last question related to retrospectivity, and if I can take that question together with the question on delegation. So I'll take them one after the other. So what can we do if, because we understand there's an absolute rationale for that retrospectivity. There's a reason why the committee and the Fifth Parliament brought that in. There is a need to protect people and to restore some injustices that were committed in the past. I mean, we all know the stories of authors who really got nothing. Photographers, they've got nothing for their pictures, and yet these companies make money off that. The problem is that there are so many answers. The question is who? How do we differentiate between who was in fact disadvantaged and who wasn't? Because it's not everyone that was disadvantaged. How do you distinguish between that? What happens if a third innocent party obtains those rights? You can't prejudice an innocent third party who wasn't part of that. How do you deal with all of that? Now, what the committee in the Fifth Parliament proposed as a compromise is what I would suggest is how this committee can still deal with that injustice, dealing with that injustice, even though it is not part of this bill. And that was for the minister to conduct an impact assessment and to see how this matter can be addressed. What would be the process? What would be needed? What is the research that has to be done? How many people are affected by this? And from there, to develop a process, see what the process's impact would be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then that impact assessment and proposed solution should be brought to this committee, and this committee can then discuss and make recommendations and that can be then be taken into legislation, because it will have to be law in the end. It can't be just a policy. The respective application of law has to be certain, and therefore it has to be legislation. So there's one step outstanding before this can be legislation, and that is just that impact. To go and see who will be impacted, how can we assist them, and what will be the impact of our solution. That is the step that's outstanding, and that is making it vague and making retrospectivity a little bit of concern when it comes to the rule of law. I think when we look at the delegation of powers, absolutely, it is the norm for Parliament to delegate powers to the executive. What we can't do is Parliament cannot delegate its plenary powers. Parliament cannot say to the executive, you may amend this bill, this act. Parliament cannot say to the executive, you can go and make an act by yourself. We can't delegate that power, because that is a constitutional power given to the legislature. But what Parliament can do is say, go and develop a process. Go and decide what the criteria would be for someone to qualify for this incentive. Go and decide what is the administrative process in how you will be issuing this license, how you will renew this license. Those things happen in most acts. I almost can't think of an act that doesn't have a regulation clause. It is absolutely the norm. And that is why we are saying, if the committee decides to retain the retrospective provisions, then we don't see any problem with the delegation. However, the reason for the delegation is because of the concerns in respect of the retrospective clauses. So, if we delete the clauses that deal with retrospectivity, the delegations fall away automatically, because it is the same subsection that deals with this. What is subsection? It is paragraph A, the delegations are paragraph B. And our recommendation would be to delete A and B in the whole of subsection 7. To be deleted, which then will automatically be a deletion of the delegation as well. So I think I've answered all the questions, or I hope that members are satisfied with the responses that I provided. Thank you.
Can we then actually check, because the opportunity today is to actually make sure that there's full understanding and engagement of the portfolio committee members with the legal team. And we're hoping that when we reconvene, we will actually look at each of the area, having shared with the advocate, each area of the six, be able to actually resolve and decide what is the decision of the committee in response to the reservation of the president. I think the issue of the constitutionality is what we're actually looking at. It's not actually a point of adding anything new to the bill. It's actually having the bill in line with what we actually think were challenges which the president has raised with us. Let me check further if ever there's any further comments or questions. Yes, sir.
If I may, there is Mrs. Hermans and Mr. Burns and Mamasha, Chair. But then maybe after the question, maybe in terms of processes, I can maybe address the committee on that, Chair.
Okay, good. Let's actually take, is it Burns and Mamasha?
Mrs. Hermans first, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Hermans, and then Burns and Mamasha, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to speak on the process, but I hear the committee secretary is going to deal with it afterwards, because my concern is that on the portfolio agenda for the next time we look at the remitted bills, it says formal consideration. So my concern is that formal consideration based on what? Because as political parties, part of this portfolio committee, we've not said what our resolution is going to be in terms of all six reservations. So maybe the committee secretary will spell out the process so that I can understand. How do we go straight into formal consideration?
Thank you very much, Honorable Hammond. I'm sure we'll engage that. Let's get Honorable Ben Ngamashe.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks to Advocate Panar Merve for making for giving some clarity on the issues that were raised. I just want to put an emphasis, Chair, on the importance of public participation, which I suppose is quite envisaged in terms of both Section 59 and Section 72 in respect of both the National Assembly and the NCOP. And I'm raising this, Chair, precisely because the Constitutional Court on the matter, I think the citation would be the Land Access Movement of South Africa and others, as well as Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces and others. It's a judgment that was handed down by Judge Madlanga in 2016. What I want to highlight on this issue, when Judge Madlanga handed down that judgment, there's an important issue that he brought to the fore, and you will get it at in clause 58 of the judgment, where he, if I can quote it, fortunately I've got the judgment with me, where he says it is beneath the dignity of those entitled to be allowed to participate in the legislative process to be denied this constitutional right. And when he argues at this point, he actually predicates it on the judgment that was handed down by Justice Sachs, where Justice Sachs made the following, which I would be happy to get the understanding Advocate Fonar Merve expressing herself to these issues raised in that judgment, that it is constitutive, that is referring to the people, it is constitutive of their dignity as citizens today that they not only have a chance to speak but also enjoy the assurance they will be listened to. This would be of special relevance for those who may feel politically disadvantaged at present because they lack higher education, access to resources, and strong political connections. Public involvement accordingly strengthens rather than undermines formal democracy by responding to and negating some of its functional deficits. I'm raising this because it is at the nub of what the president has expressed, you know, to say when he expressed concerns as to the extent of public participation on this matter, and my view is that while she is still presenting, let me raise this issue so that when we start to deliberate as members now, we do have all these
clarities having been navigated by advocate for that matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And Secretariat, I'm sure we can actually get your contribution, because I think we're talking about a process which is very specific in terms of the issues relating to the constitutionality or what has come through as reservation of the president in the strict area. So I think maybe the Secretariat can be able to speak to those issues, because we're not starting from scratch. We are actually responding to the president, and I think those are the issues which we're actually engaging on, because they are also issues of impact. And obviously in terms of the two bills, there are specific issues that were captured to be able to actually make sure that the environment under legislation for performers and issues relating to copyright were actually promoted to create an environment more conducive for performers and in terms of the copyright there. So, Secretary, maybe I can actually invite
you,
but let me ask that maybe we can have the advocate commenting on the last comments that you've got. Then immediately we'll ask you, Secretary, just to speak to what would be actually issue of process on how we manage these issues moving forward.
No problem, Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I apologize. Actually, I did not speak to the National House of Traditional Leaders specifically. Just to confirm to members that both bills were in fact referred to the House of Traditional Leaders. Copyright was referred in September of 2017, and the performance protection was referred in February of 2017. So the National House of Traditional Leaders have been consulted on both bills. Just in general on public participation, as I also said in my presentation, we are of the view that there was sufficient public participation on all issues of the bill. I, in fact, just quickly looked at my notes now, and on, for instance, the copyright amendment bill specifically, we had four rounds of public inputs on that bill. So it's definitely an indication that any new matter was taken to the public. But that having been said, Section 59 requires Parliament to facilitate public involvement in its legislative processes. And the courts have found significant discretion for Parliament in this regard. Parliament needs to look at the impact of the bill, the importance of the bill, etc., etc., etc. And this committee will be within its power to say that it wants additional public participation done. Our view is, if the committee says no, it wasn't, that should pass constitutional muster, but the committee has the discretion to call for further comment. We must just be cautious in that when the committee, if the committee decides to call for further public participation, it has to be limited to the concern, the area that are affected by the concerns of the president. But that will be a matter of wording. It is not something that should stop the committee from exercising that discretion. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can I invite the
Chair?
Yes.
No problem, Chair.
Secretariat?
Chair, can I ask, we prepared a document, Chair, because I think after Ms. Advocate Pondomarewa has briefed the committee, and committee has asked clarification questions, is about the process forward and how we move to taking a decision next Wednesday, Chair. Chair, as in the document, we've highlighted the reservations that the President has made. We also, in the next column, we put the recommendations of the advocate for the committee's consideration as well. What the committee needs to do is either to, in principle, come to a decision on each of these things and finalize that decision next week, Wednesday. So the process would be is that on issue one, on tagging of the bill, committee needs to express a view. So parties can must express a view that they're either in favor of 75 or they will err on the side of caution and would request that the bill be classified as 76. So then we can get a position from the committee on this matter. So parties can express a view on that now, Chair. So when we leave today, we have a sense of what the committee is thinking in terms of drafting a report on the matter. And that will go for each of the reservations so that we can get a position of the committee in principle at the moment so that the committee can take the matter to the caucuses and say this is what the committee is thinking and be guided by the caucuses and finalize that process next Wednesday, Chair. So for each reservation, the committee can start deliberating, parties can then put their position forward, where they're either in agreement with the president or they agree with the advocate, and the committee then formulate a position in principle at this stage on all these reservations. And as Advocate Van der Merwe has indicated, we are limited to the reservations of the president, Chair. Thank you. Mrs. Hammonds, raise the hand, Chair.
Honorable Hammonds.
Chair, can I just check, are we going to take the input from the political parties now?
That is what we're proposing, Chair, that we all the political parties can then give the input on each of these reservations, and then we formulate, and then we can see the consensus on these issues, and then come back next Wednesday and finalise the process, Chair. Mr. McPherson will raise his hand, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Hammonds.
Yes,
Honorable Hammonds. I don't know if you answered. Let's just get
to No, but my hand was up to speak on that matter, so...
Yes. That's why I say, let's hear you first, Honorable Hammonds. Then we'll actually go to McPherson. Honorable Hammonds. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. The ANC is of the view that the bill is correctly tagged as the 75 bill, and we are supported by the legal opinion that this committee has received. So, but we are however, saying that in retaining it as a Section 75 bill, we want to refer it to the joint tagging mechanism to either to support or to recommend changing. So we're saying remain Section 75, but refer it to the joint tagging mechanism. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Hammonds?
Mr. McPherson, Chair?
Because we are taking the one for tagging, let's get back, Honourable McPherson.
Well, I wanted to ask whether it's not more prudent that, after the briefing this morning, after the decisions required, is it not better that this document goes away, that it's considered, and then, formal recommendations from each party is then made in writing to be considered by the committee instead of just trying to consider it on the fly. That would be my first procedure question. So I'd like that answered first before I proceed.
Yes. Secretariat?
Chair, if I may, I don't know what we propose is that there won't be a decision taken today on the matter. It's just to get the in-principle position of all parties on each of the reservations. Parties will take that matter to the particular caucuses, Chair, and then parties will come back in Wednesday with a formal decision of the party. But it's the process is just to get the in principle or a position on each of the clauses, so that when we start drafting a report, we get have a sense of there is consensus on A, B, and C, and D, E, and F. There's different views, which then will have to be finalized next week. But that's just the process. No decision is being taken at this moment, Chair. It's just to get the in principle positions of parties on these matters. And then, obviously, we will formalise the process in the following week, Chair.
So may I respond then, please, Chair?
Okay. McPherson, because I think for today has suggested, sure. If you in it's in order, that is actually more deliberations. The formality would actually be sitting on our next meeting, McPherson.
Yes,
let's take you, next speaker.
Thanks. So, I think that, you know, these are not things that should just be sort of done on a whim and a sort of a feeling or a just to get an idea of what everyone thinks. I mean, these are deeply complex questions that may have legal ramifications going forward. So certainly from our side, we would prefer to give a written and considered position into each of these questions based on the document that is up on the screen. We will then provide that to yourself and the committee to then be circulated ahead of formal deliberations on Wednesday. But I think it's a bit fruitless just having sort of a merry-go-round discussion on these issues when they are far more deeper and complex than we would like to think they are. Thanks.
Secretariat, I think what we're having through is that document you have just flighted. We would actually then be able to actually have that shared with the earlier part of the advocate's engagement. Parties go away with that, have a look at that, and then maybe on the next session, we will be looking at actually how we conclude on the basis of what Honorable Hammonds was actually doing, would actually then start moving on the third column to actually put those views and be able to get parties to be able to speak to those issues and see how the committee get to consensus and way forward. So I think that might be the point, because it doesn't conflict, and I think from what Honorable McPherson is raising, he's just suggesting that we get more time with that chat of the document that you have presented as the secretariat. I think that's Chair, my understanding. Yes.
Chair, we are just, the committee can determine that process itself, Chair. If what Mr. McPherson is proposing and the committee is in agreement to that, the committee, we can forward this document to all members and the presentation, and then we can then ask members to submit this or give a timeline when this can be submitted to the secretariat, so that members can be afforded sufficient time to apply their minds to the issue. But that will be the committee's decision on how they proceed on the matter. That was proposed by Mr. McPherson. Chair, Ms. Yakub, Mr. Cuthbert, and Mr. Mulder raised their hands, Chair, as well.
Okay. In that order, Yakub.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that I'm in agreement with Honourable McPherson on this one, that I don't believe that we can just say on a whim that we are in support of the tagging, we are in support of this and that, because this bill is very complex, and I feel like there's many issues that personally that we have as parties that need to be consolidated in a document that then speaks to what we feel about this particular bill itself. There's many worrying issues on this bill that we cannot just comment on based on the presentation that we received today. And I think that as a committee, we should then say that we would like to have written submissions by a specific date, and then the secretariat can make an informed decision with the assistance of the chairperson and give us direction on that.
Okay. Is it Mulder, the next member? Secretary?
Followed by Mr. Mulder and by Mrs. Hermans.
Okay. Honourable Cuthbert.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the back of what Honourable McPherson and Honourable service clause, for example, then at least we aren't, you know, wasting our time today, you know, providing in some respects an uninformed opinion. So I think let's go about doing it that way. And then at least, you know, everybody can take this to their parties, get the necessary feedback, and then be able to contribute and get this matter finalized next week.
Let me actually get the next one. It was Mulder.
Mulder. Thank you, Chair. Now, without wasting the committee's time, I just wanted to support the honourable member's suggestion, so I'll just keep to that. Thank you, Chair.
There was Hammonds following on that. Honourable Hammonds.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. You will recall that we have been looking at these remitted bills since 2019. So when we are speaking as political parties in this portfolio committee meeting, we are not speaking on a whim, we are not speaking on the fly, we are not speaking uninformed. These matters, we were given this time to deliberate as parties. There is nothing new. The advocate presentation is a repeat presentation. So, but it's fine, I will support the fact that we that the document be circulated, we populate it with our party positions, and that we deliberate on it next week. Thank you.
Secretariat, I'm sure we can actually be able to actually facilitate that, because I think for parties, in terms of what you've put up as a chart with three areas where parties have got on the third side space for their positions and be able to do take the process. Can I just check then what would be the best conclusion on how we manage the process from you, Secretariat? Because I think in terms of the reminder by the advocate, it was quite clear. And I think we did actually have some time to engage as political parties. But for today's meeting, it was actually just to speak and remind ourselves of issues that we discussed previously. And I think it should be able to help us, you know, get to some kind of a decision in our next meeting. But for now, we do have a chat by the Secretariat with the three columns where the parties should be able to, you know, confirm a sense of where they actually taking the process to on the third column, being the part that we should be able to discuss when we reconvene and be able to take the process forward.
Secretary, Chair, on the process forward, Chair, we just need to determine a date when parties submit the document to the Secretary, Chair. May I propose that we receive that subject to the approval of the committee, that we receive that document by midday on Monday, Chair. Also, just to stress to the members that their inputs are limited to the reservations only, and they must confine themselves to only the president's reservation within the response, Chair. So, if committee is okay with the proposal that parties submit the document by Monday, so that we can circulate it to other parties in the afternoon of Monday, Chair, and give other parties opportunity on Tuesday to go through that document and finalize the process on Wednesday, Chair.
I think there is a proposal. It's an administrative point raised by the Secretariat. And I think parties have agreed to that kind of approach. So let's actually do that. I think honorable members are comfortable that Monday be deadline for submissions. And then our Wednesday 12th meeting be the meeting where we actually get, you know, to resolve on the six issues positioned by the committee. So I'm sure that will be acceptable, honourable members. because I think that's what you suggested. And Secretariat, we need just to get all of us by Monday 10th of May submitting our inputs from our own artists so that they can be able to actually highlight those issues where on our part, looking at the deliberations of the issue, we should actually be able to actually look at the matter when we discuss as the committee, because that will be an issue that we need to actually consider moving forward. Honorable members, I'm sure that will be in order. Because it is the 11th of May, which is Tuesday, where we're going to reconvene and sort of conclude on the matter and take the process forward. So silence means consent. So Secretariat, I think that's what we should be able to expect. And I think for members and different parties, please let's actually go through. I'm sure the presentation of the advocate, which was a reminder, correctly so, as expressed by Honorable Hammonds, we should actually circulate to all members just as a reminder. And I'm sure as parties, we would have looked at the issue. And I think the very important issue that we are looking at the remitted bills on the basis of reservation of the president on the constitutionality. So I think that's how we can conclude. Unless there are issues for comments or questions for clarity, honorable members, I think that's the conclusion of this matter. Secretariat, I'm sure that's in order.
That's in order, Chair. There's no further hands. Chair, you can conclude the process.
Okay. Honorable members, I think in terms of our discussion today, in terms of our agenda, we did actually agree that we would look at this issue. We will reconvene after the processes. I'm sure Secretariat will facilitate that communication as well. We will ask for parties to actually then, you know, respond and submit. And I think on the 11th, looking at the issue of the sugar industry master plan and the issue of remitted bills, we will actually be able to conclude on this matter and continue with the process of implementation. We have had enough time as well to actually engage within our parties, as parties from the previous time where we received this issue as the portfolio committee from the 10th of June last year from the president. Thank you very much. I'm sure in terms of the agenda, we can be able to say our meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we will conclude our meeting like that today. All the best till we meet on the next meeting. The next meeting, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Next meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you.